Today is August 15th, 1988, and I'm here with Wesley Brown at his home in Jacksonville, Florida. And we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the circus traditions and the oral history of the circus. And this is being done for the Duval County Folk Arts and Education Projects for the Florida Folklife Program. Okay, first of all, I need your complete name.
Wesley Montgomery Brown.
Okay. And your address?
3229 Percy Road, Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay. And this part of Jacksonville's zip code?
32218.
Okay. All right. And we need your date of birth and your birthplace also.
Charlotte, North Carolina, 1909.
Okay. All right. And, boy, I didn't know you were that old there.
I've been here a while.
Yeah. Yeah. You have me fooled. Okay. And other places that you've lived besides North Carolina there?
Columbia, South Carolina. Atlanta, Georgia, Jacksonville, Florida, Baraboo, Wisconsin, Sarasota, Miami, Washington, D.C. The rest of them were a very short time, a day or two.
Oh, I see. When you're traveling with the circus there, right?
Right.
Yeah. All the different moves that were mainly for circus-type jobs, I would suppose?
Some of them. I was with Eastern Airlines, for about 15 years in my lifetime.
Oh, I see.
But the rest of I spent some time with the circus before that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
After I retired from Eastern, I went into the oil business for a short period of time, and then back in the circus business. In about 1960.
Okay. How long have you lived in Jacksonville?
I came to Jacksonville in, the first time in 1932.
And then you did some other moves before you eventually settled back here?
Yeah, quite a few.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm interested in how you got started with the circus. Where did that all come from?
Well, When I was a youngster living in Columbia, South Carolina, the circus lot was directly across the street in front of our home. And my father knew some of the circus people. And at that time, Ringling Brothers was one circus, and Barnum and Bailey was another circus. They were two different circuses. And one used to play on the circus lot in front of our house in the early part of the spring, and the other show would come in the fall and play. And I guess that's when I was a kid then, probably, as well as I can remember, maybe 8 or 9 years old. But I'll never forget those days of being so handy to the circus, watching it come in, set up, put on two shows and tear down and be gone the next morning. It was a fascinating scene to behold. And back then, a kid didn't have much to go to except a nickel picture show once in a while. And, that circus to me was absolutely the most fantastic thing that ever happened. And still, I think it's one of the greatest forms of entertainment in the world. You know, a circus is the only form of entertainment in the world that's never been censored.
I didn't know that at all.
It never has. There's nothing about it that has to be censored. It's nothing about it that, except good, clean, physical and mental entertainment. You got good acrobats, and you got wonderful animal people, animal acts, and it's
an incredible variety of things going on at the circus there.
You got something for everybody. You got clowns, you got animals, you got horses, you got all kind of animals, you got wonderful athletes that are doing fantastic feats of athletic and gymnastics, and the best in the world. There's no way to, unless it's next to the Olympics, everything is to perfection as near as they can get it. And it's done sometimes under adverse conditions, but they still perform.
How did you get your first job with the circus?
More or less accidentally. I was in the oil business for a short time after I left the airline, and I came home one day. I'd sold my oil business and came home one day and told my wife, I said, for the first time in my life, I'm out of a job. And I sat down on the settee, and before I got seated good, the phone rang. And I had been doing some circus work on the side and helping put on parades and whatnot. And it was a call from Baraboo, Wisconsin, the Ringling Brothers, old one of quarters, and they asked me if I'd be interested in coming to work for them. And it only took me about 48 hours to catch an airplane and head for Baraboo, Wisconsin. And I've been mixed up in it ever since.
When was this?
Well, this was after I got in it permanently.
It
was in the early 60s.
What were your jobs there during the 60s that you did for them?
Well, it was wagon restoration, restoring old circus wagons and rebuilding circus equipment and helping put on shows and loading the circus train and unloading the circus train and going off, putting on these parades at different places. And then after I left the museum in Baraboo, I went with Hoxie Brothers Circus. And my wife and I were with them for 3 years. Then after that, we went with the Wild West Show, the Diamond S Wild West Show, which is pretty close to circus. And I don't think a man has ever lived until he spends 1 year with the Wild West Show. That's an education within itself. And then after we left the Wild West Show, most everybody was on the Wild West Show, old circus people, a lot of them. We brought over some circus acts when we came over to the Wild West Show with us and used them on the Wild West Show. And then after that, I went back with the circus, straight circus business again. Went back with Hoxie Brothers Circus again. Then I went with the Great American Circus, and I managed for the Great American Circus a couple of years. And I was property superintendent for Hoxie Brothers for about 5 or 6 years. And I had some strange and marvelous things that happened from time to time.
Mm-hmm. What really stands out in your mind as being some of the stranger and more marvelous?
Well, there's always some little funny something happens. One day there was one of the trucks cut a corner too short, and this lady had a nice tree growing on the corner. And she came down to the circus lot and said that they had bruised up her tree and that she wanted to be reimbursed for the tree. So we have what we call a fixer on the show that goes and takes care of these things. Well, I went down with him, and he's pretty sharp. So he talked to the lady, and she wanted $45 for the damage to her tree. He said, well, is that what the tree's worth? She said, yeah, that's what it cost me, $45. So he said, I'll be right back. He went back to the circus lot and got an elephant and put a harness on it and a chain and came back and started wrapping the chain around the tree. The lady said, what are you going to do? Said, lady, if we're going to buy the tree, we're going to take it. She said, oh, wait a minute. He said, well, you want the $45 of the tree. She said, leave the tree and go. So that's the way they take care of things. So he talked himself out of having to buy a tree and satisfied the lady to boot. Because if she wanted the $45, he was going to pull up the tree with the elephant and take it back to the show lot. Boy, it had been laying there when we left, of course.
So they were pretty shrewd people back then in the circus?
You had to be to get along. It's, everybody was out to take the circus. You go in and set up, and here comes the local people, and they want you to buy a dog license for every dog on the show. They want you to buy food handler's license for everybody that's selling peanuts and popcorn. Not every town, but everyone's different. The greatest thing is satisfying the animal people these days. They're so afraid that you're mistreating animals, especially animals that are considered becoming extinct. But really, a lot of these animals that they claim are becoming extinct are not really becoming extinct. It's man has run them off. The animals, it's man's fault, not the animals.
Were the animals treated pretty well with the circus when you were with them?
Well, elephants live longer on a circus than they do in the wild. Animals, circus elephants have been known to live 75 and 80 years old. And the average life of an elephant is about the same as a human being. And African elephant or Asian elephant in the wild, this is from my knowledge of reading and studying about animals, that their lifespan be 50 to 60 years. We've had circus elephants that lived 75 to 80 years old.
Before you worked with the circus full-time, did you do part-time work for them, that type of thing?
Yeah, some.
Oh, I see.
I helped Ringland some, served them some with the fuel needs and equipment needs and whatnot. And I knew quite a few people in this circus. So I kept gradually working my way into. I guess it was because I was like the kid. I wanted to run away with the circus, but I didn't have a nerve to do it. So it finally got down to where I just didn't care whether I did or not, and away I went.
Before that time, you'd been trained to work with as a wheelwright and that type of repairs?
No, I learned most of that after I got with the show with the circus.
Oh, I see.
I had done some of it when I was a youngster, back when I lived on the farm, when we had farm equipment. I learned to drive horses and repair wagons and do stuff the hard way, learn how to do some blacksmith work, and welding, and handle forge stuff, which all come in handy in the circus business because you have to make things do.
I suppose those kind of skills are things that you just learn on the farm as part of the everyday activities, right? It was, I suppose, something taught from your father or other farmhands, that type of thing.
Yeah, my father was, I'd consider him a circus fan. He loved the circus.
Oh, I see.
I remember when we were kids, if a circus come to town in those days, the schools closed down. There wasn't no question of getting out of school. The school just, circus day was a holiday. It was standard equipment. My dad would never go to work on circus day. We'd be down at the railroad yard when the circus train come in. We'd be there at night when the last wagon was loaded and the train left town. We put a full day in at the circus. And I guess that's where I got my bugs finally, they bit me the hardest, was when I was a youngster in my teens.
What areas of Florida are really known for their circuses?
What areas?
Right.
Well, DeLand, Florida is the winter quarters for Clyde Beatty and Cole Brothers Circus, which is one of the largest tent circuses in the United States right now. And Miami won a quarters a couple of circuses. And Sarasota won a quarters about five circuses. And Venice, Florida won a quarters Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey's Red Unit and Blue Unit. One a quarter in Venice, Florida. So Florida is really circus headquarters right now. And of course, there's another big circus, Carson Barnes Circus, one a quarter in Hugo, Oklahoma. And it's the big circus. And there's another circus that one a quarter in Hugo, Oklahoma. But, a smaller, much smaller circus. Carson Barnes Circus travels on about 36 semis. It's a big circus. It's a five-ring circus. And there's a big circus out in California. There's two circuses out in California. Then we have a lot of what we call briefcase circuses, where a man goes out and books a circus and then he hires a bunch of circus acts and puts them together and puts a circus in a coliseum. It'd be like the Shrine Circus, which comes to Jacksonville. It's put on by Bill Kay. And Bill Kay puts on Shrine Circuses all over the eastern part of the United States. The Hannaford Brothers Circus is out of Sarasota. The Great American Circus is out of Sarasota. There's around 50 tent circuses traveling in the United States today.
Are they doing pretty well today?
All the circuses are doing well. There was a period when TV was beginning to hurt the circus, and now that TV's got a little boring to people, circus entertainment is picking up. Mm-hmm. There's more people going to see live actual entertainment. Mm-hmm. Because if a circus artist makes a mistake, fails to complete his trick, you see it in the circus and he has to do it over again. Where on TV you don't see anything but perfection. They only tape it when he does it. They keep taping it till he does it right. So you see only the good part on TV. At an actual circus, you may see a man miss a trick and have to do it over again. And mistakes that are made, you see them.
That helps it make it more exciting because you're not sure if he's going to
complete the trick. You see the real raw thing.
Yeah.
Whereas on TV, you only see perfection. They don't show anything else.
When you were working with the circus, what was the schedule like as far as touring with it?
You mean when the show went out?
Right, when you were out on the road there.
Well, we generally went out in the latter part of March, about March 15th, and then stayed out 32 weeks. Out of the 32 weeks, we play a different town every day, 7 days a week. Maybe you'd have 2 days off out of the 32 weeks. unless you had a day off on account of weather, which was very rare. No matter how bad the weather was, you generally put on a show. I've seen it rain so hard until it would wash the rain curve out of the tent, and we'd still put on a show. Water would be coming through, so the rain curve would float off.
Wow.
And the props, some of them would float away. And you'd still put on a show, put on rubber boots and a raincoat and go at it. And the people, to your amazement, will sit there and applaud even louder when you're under those conditions sometime than they do normally.
I suppose you get the real dedicated circus goers to something
right.
like that.
I've seen it so muddy until when the elephants would get up on the pedestals to do their tricks, the pedestals would sink down in the mud. We'd have to put a chain on them and get the elephants to pull them back out of the mud to remove them from the rain.
Wow.
And we'd still put on the show and put the show off the lot and back on it, be gone the next morning to another muddy lot.
How many hour days would you work with that, putting together something?
Well, we generally leave. When I was managing the show, I always left at 4:30 in the morning. Would leave the lot where we were to go to the next town. If it was an average jump of not over 75 or 100 miles, if it was more than 150 miles, I would generally leave the night before. When we got through tearing down, loaded up, we'd leave. But if it was under 150 miles, we'd leave the next morning at 4 o'clock, wake everybody up, have donuts and coffee from the cookhouse, and pull off the lot and go to the next town. You'd get there before the school buses started running and traffic got heavy. Get into the town early in the morning and be on the lot. We'd generally be set up and ready to have a show by noon. And everybody would go to bed and get a good rest and get some sleep. And our first show was anywhere from 3:30 in the afternoon until 6. And we'd have another show at 8 o'clock at night. And that show would generally last about 2 hours. And by 12 o'clock at night, we generally had everything tore down and packed up and ready to pull off the lot. And everybody would go to bed and get some sleep and wake up at 4:30 and be gone again.
Wow.
You get that rhythm to going, and it works just like clockwork. You don't have to get after anybody. Everybody knows what to do. It moves just like magic.
And did it keep that schedule up for 32 weeks?
32 weeks.
Would that get demanding for you and tiring by the end of that session?
No. The only thing you hate is the day off. You get so... If something happens that you have a day off, it throws everything out of kilter. And then you have about 3 days before you can get everybody going again.
How far would you tour with that circus?
How far would we travel?
Right.
Each year we travel anywhere from 13,000 to 15,000 miles a year.
Would you go all across the United States there for it?
No, we didn't. We didn't go west of the Mississippi. All the shows that I was with stayed this side of Mississippi, which would we generally start out and come up through Florida. A lot of times we'd open in Miami Springs or someplace like that from Sarasota, and then we'd start up the East Coast, and within 30 days we'd be up in the Virginias, then up through Pennsylvania and New York. We'd go into New Jersey and generally stay in New Jersey for sometimes 30 to 60 days in New Jersey. We play every little town in New Jersey. Is a good show state. You can play on one side of the road one day and on the other side of the road the next day and still pack them in.
Huh. Wonder why New Jersey's so good there.
It's just there's a lot of people and a lot of concentrated people
uh-huh.
around in New Jersey. It's concentrated areas.
Uh-huh.
And the lower part of New York is the same way. And Pennsylvania is a good show country. The Carolinas are good. And Virginia's a little bit slow. One time maybe you can't take care of the people. And then the next time you hit, you wonder where the people are. And then the next year you play that same town, you never know who's coming and who isn't.
How about some other areas that are maybe kind of slow?
It depends on the condition of employment in that particular area at the time. You kind of have to watch it. If you go in a town where it had bad crops or business is bad, you can expect the show to be, your attendance to be bad. But if it's a good, prosperous town and the crops are good, you'll have good attendance.
How would you go about setting up the schedule for your tours with the circus?
Well, it's generally set up at least 6 to 8 months ahead of time. You have men that go out on the road ahead of the show, go into these different towns, and they generally try to find sponsors, like the Lions Club, or Police Department, or Firemen, or Sheriff's Department, or Kiwanis Clubs. Sometimes we've played towns where churches would sponsor the circus and do real good. And outfit that sponsors the circus and do a little work themselves to help sell some tickets can make themselves a pretty good amount of change. Some serious money can be made if they put some effort into it.
So the sponsoring agency would get a certain cut from the admission tickets?
It depends on how they would sponsor it. Some places sponsor it. They want you to do all the advertising, and they want you to supply the lot. Well, you have to go find a vacant lot and find out who owns it. This is all done way ahead of time. Find out who owns it and how much they want for it. Give them a bond on cleaning up the lot when you leave. And make arrangements with the fire department so you can get water from the fire hydrant. And you have to make arrangements with the local farmers to furnish you with hay. If you need hay, you generally buy hay about every fourth town. And you generally buy feed for your animals and meat for the animals, like lions and tigers and your wild animals, your meat-eating animals. You generally carry one big refrigerated truck that hauls all the meat, and you try to keep it supplied. You can generally buy it from different food stores that have meat that's had a little bit too long. You find someplace. Wild animals, meat-eating animals, love chicken. The bones are nice, and they can chew them good. They love chickens. And as a rule, you can find some place that'll supply you with a lot of chickens. It's not quite up to par for selling to the public, but the animals, meat-eating animals can eat Karen's meat. It doesn't bother them a bit. Of course, we never did buy any, but you never have to worry about it being too bad. If you could eat it, they'll eat it. In other words, it may not be okay for consumption in a store. People may not want it, but they love it.
You were in charge a lot of ordering all the supplies for the animals, then?
No, you have to keep after your men that do that.
Oh, I see.
You have to make sure that you call each one of them in each day and say, now, how about hay for tomorrow? If you got hay, show me.
I see.
I want to see something that makes me know it's going to be there. Because you've got animals that have got to eat. And the same way with your grain for your horses and food for the cookhouse, it's bought every day. Mm-hmm. You have one man that As soon as the show gets in town, the first thing he does is goes to the local grocery store in town and buys food for the cookhouse for the working people. Most of the performers and all those people furnish their own food, and they live in trailers and do their own cooking and eating in the trailers. But back on the railroad show days, the circus furnished food for performers, working men, and everybody. They furnished the food for everybody. And they had men that went out in front of the show that rode passenger trains that went from town to town. And they'd go into town and get all this stuff lined up ready. When the circus come in, they'd have it delivered. And they'd take care of that town. Then they'd jump two or three towns ahead and catch that town, have it ready for the show when it come in.
Wow.
Those were known as advance men. And they'd have an advance man that'd take care of food for the cookhouse, another one to take care of laying out the lot and supplying, say where the water is and the best route from the railroad to the lot. All this stuff had to be done. All this information was sent back to the show. So when the train got in, I knew exactly which streets to go down to the show lot and which way to turn, right or left, and how big the lot was, and what condition the lot was in, whether it was soft or hard or whatnot. Whether you had to know whether you were going to use iron stakes or wooden stakes. If it was a hard lot and the ground was real solid, you'd use iron stakes. And if the lot was soft and sandy, you'd use wooden stakes. Mm-hmm. So all that had to be passed on. But it come natural, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
If everybody did their job, it was just...
So everything in general ran pretty smooth then with it?
Smooth as clockwork. A lot of businesses ran like the circus. They'd be in a lot better shape. No screaming and hollering, that's all. Everybody knows his job, and he knows he has to do it. If he doesn't do it, he knows he won't be there tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he won't be there tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. So it's a real high turnaround if people wouldn't do their jobs well?
Well, the average show, say, it has 40 or 50 working men on it. Like today, 100 working men. You'll have a turnover anywhere from, maybe 4 to 5 men a week, which is a pretty fast turnover. But when you get that new man on, he's given one job to do, and that's all he has to do it. And you can show him in 5 minutes what he's got to do, and he knows he's got to do it. And if he doesn't do it, then you'll have another man in his place tomorrow to do it. There's always somebody on the job.
Did the workers have a good chance of moving up into the better jobs?
Oh, yeah. I've seen the time when I'd pick up a man on the road, be going down the road and see some guy thumbing and take a good look at him, and he looked like he might be a pretty good, clean-cut sort of a guy. Stop and pick him up and say, "We're in the circus business going to the next town. If you haven't got a job, you want a job?" And a lot of times, yeah. I picked up guys and within a month, they'd be a boss of some department on the show and stay with it the whole season. And then the other way, you pick up a guy, as soon as he ate two or three times in the cookhouse and got his stomach full, he was gone.
Yeah. What were some of the best jobs in the circus that people would want?
Well, your highest paying jobs on a tent show is your boss canvas man and your bandmaster, your ringmaster, your performance director, your wardrobe department, and your mechanics, and your boss elephant man, your boss animal man that takes care of all the wild animals like lions, tigers, and if you got a cat act, you call it. And then you got a secretary and treasurer and a wife. Then you got a bookkeeper. Then you got an assistant manager. And you got to manage it. And then you got one layout man. And then you got a route man that does the routing. He goes to the next town and puts these arrows up on the post. On the post, on the side of a store, on the corner. You've seen arrows showing where the show was going. Some people don't notice them, but he goes along, puts up arrows. When you go to the next town, all you do is follow those arrows to the lot in the next town.
What's that?
And he's called a layout man. He goes to the next town, lays out the lot. Those are the key jobs on the show. And sometimes you use two or three layout men in a season. And they generally furnished with an automobile. And they, as soon as they come in and the show's set up and ready to go, they pick up some advance money and mark the route to the next town. So when the show leaves the next morning, they just go up into the corner, and that's 2 hours pointing that way, and the next corner, 2 hours pointing the other way, just follow the arrows to the next one. Any dummy could get there. Sometimes you lose a truck on the show route. We get to the lot and there'd be one truck missing completely. And it's a job sometimes to find them because you don't know where they are.
Yeah.
They've turned off someplace or got lost, and you just get with the highway patrol and have them start with them, work it down to county patrol, and pretty soon, yeah, we found your truck. It's in the town 50 miles away. And the driver's gone. So you have to send the driver over to pick it up and bring it back. Something happens every day that's different.
Wow. Imagine having like a missing hippopotamus 50 miles away.
Well, we had the lion act one time. We drove up into a town. And the guy got lost, and I guess he got scared and was afraid he's going to get in trouble. So he just parked the truck and took off. And he was about 45 miles from where he should be. And this truckload of lions was sitting side the road and nobody around. We had to send the man over to pick it up.
Did the performers do also kind of support type jobs?
It depended on the performers. Most everybody on the show likes to make a little extra money. And if a performer helped set up, when you come into town, help with the setting up, he was paid extra for it. And the boss in that department, you have a property boss that's in charge of, well, the first man that hits the lot, it's up to him to put up the big top. As soon as he gets the big top up and gets it set, then the seating department comes in and sets up the seats. After they get through, then the property boss comes in. Of course, he's been working all the time. Every time a pole goes up, he's got a block and tackle hung on it for some act. He's getting his equipment set up all the time. That's the property crew. They set up all that. They put down the ring curb. They bring in the stages and set them up. They set up all the rigging for the flying act and all that rigging. They have all the props for the different animal acts, the bicycles for the bicycle acts, all handled by the property department. Brought in, set up a property boss, makes a pretty good, he's one of the high paid men on the show. And he has a crew of men, whatever he thinks he needs to handle the property. And after that's all set up, then if it's a dusty day, they have to bring the water truck in and water down in the big top so it won't be too dusty when the animals are working. And after that's all set up, and the superintendent walks in and looks at everything and it satisfies him. If the seats look like they're okay, he checks them out, he checks out everything, just walks around and takes a look. All the poles are good and straight and the big top. Everything's ready for the show and you can put one on right then. He says, okay, everybody go to bed. Sleep. We'll go get some rest. Mm-hmm. And it's generally about dinner time then, and everybody goes to the cookhouse, gets something to eat, they take a bath and go to bed, whatever they want to do, until showtime. And the big top crew doesn't have anything to do unless they got some repair work to do on some part of the tent, something to fix, they get that fixed. And they don't have anything to do until teardown time comes at night.
Are there some different things that the circus people would do to bring them good luck? Kind of some, maybe superstitions or things along like that? Or were they not very superstitious people?
They're fairly superstitious about some things, but not as a rule. I've never seen this. I don't think there's as much superstition about circus people as it is about some other things.
I see.
Like a baseball.
Right.
Man won't step on the foul line, things like that. A black cat crossing the road, they don't pay any attention to stuff like that.
Uh-huh. I was wondering if they might have some kind of beliefs about things to bring them good luck that only circus people would know about.
I've never seen anything.
Anything that they would do to...
I'm sure that a lot of them had their
Yeah.
Superstitions about different things that they may have kept to themselves.
They just
but there was nothing in general like... theatrical people, the first performance, they say, I hope you break your leg or something
right.
like that.
And, right.
First performance with the circus, we generally put on the first show right from bang. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we never even had a rehearsal. We just sit down and put it together on paper mm-hmm. and throw it out there and it goes. Mm-hmm. Generally your best two or three shows are the best ones because the more things happen. Mm-hmm. there's more guys fall and more mistakes made in the first four or five shows, and everybody has a ball. I mean, everybody's laughing at each other. Boy, you sure tore it up today, didn't you?
I see. I was thinking, because there's a lot of risk, I would think, would be involved in being in the circus, is that they might have some things to kind of bring
And animals are always giving you a surprise.
Yeah.
A guy come dashing in the door with nine elephants, and they start the elephant act, and they look around, and they short two elephants. Two of them's left. They say, oopie, what happened? Well, they haven't got into the swing of things yet, you know. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy working with the animals pretty well?
Oh, yeah, they always a surprise and a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You never know what they're going to do next. We had a gorilla on the show one time, and he was supposed to be the Gargantua number two. And we had him on the show, and the guy was in cleaning out the cage and forgot and left his broom in there. And they put the gorilla in a smaller cage inside the big cage while he cleaned it out. And you could go outside and open it and let him out. And he went out and grabbed the broom, took it, punched it through the glass that was on the... and broke his glass right at showtime. And there's always some animal pulling some goofy, something that you don't know what they're going to do next.
How did people get along pretty well in the circuses? Were there problems or did they get along pretty well there?
There's nothing that comes together better and quicker to help each other than show people under adverse conditions. Say if you have a storm and you're having trouble, I don't care, the highest paid performer on the show that don't even have to shine his own shoes will be out there in the mud helping you. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to ask for help, it comes. Because they know that if that show don't move, they don't get paid. And then another thing is I think that the people are actually dedicated show people or they wouldn't be there in the first place. Mm.
So they really enjoy what they're doing there?
They enjoy what they're doing. I've never seen anybody yet that I would say that didn't like what they were doing. They might not like what they're doing right at that particular minute. But you tell them you don't want them to do it tomorrow, they say, why? I like to do that.
They probably complain about it a little bit while they're doing it, but if it comes to the idea of changing it, forget it.
Some of the hardest things I had to do when I was a manager on the show was to get somebody not to do their act. If it was real hot weather and a flying act, and the temperature in the top of the tent would be 120 degrees, and they'd get up there and the sweat just pouring off of them, and they... no way they could hang on to that stuff with their sweat. And they'd still say, they want you to go today. Why? Well, let us try. They want you to cut their act.
Huh. Mm-mm. A lot of those acts seem like they're things that are learned in the family. For example, you have like the trapeze artists that are often Italian trapeze artists or something
90% of circus acts are family tradition, handed down from one generation to the other. And all have been in show business for years. Like the Flying Wards and the Willendas and the Hannafords and the bareback riders and the wild animal people like Charlie Bowman on the Ringling Show and the ones that work tigers and lions, and that's all they ever, their family ever did. They were, and your tumblers and all those people, wire walkers, their father used to, their grandfather used to.
Yeah.
It's,
they just kind of learn these skills as they're coming up in the family, I suppose.
They break them in early.
Yeah.
Just like I got a friend up in Baraboo right now. She's got a little girl 3 years old, and she's learned to walk the wire. And she can't hardly walk good herself. She can walk as good on the wire as she can on the ground. She's coming right along.
Wow. Wow. Huh. What are some of your favorite acts to see in the circus?
I don't know. You get to watching them every day. You see a circus every day for 32 weeks. You get so after a while till, I don't know, you don't particularly have a favorite. I think ones I enjoy looking at the most is probably flying acts, because there's so much grace and rhythm involved in a flying act. That's the trapeze act. And it's considered the top echelon performers of the circus flying acts, and there's been some wonderful flying acts over the years and families that did.
I didn't realize that there was kind of a hierarchy of circus performing acts where the flying acts were on the top like that. What are some of the other higher ones like that?
Well, flying acts and I'd say you'll high wire acts would come in, as far as I'm concerned, be your next highest paid jobs. And then you'd go down to your lower echelon stuff. The most dangerous acts on a circus were the parallel bar acts. That's the ones where they just stand on the ground and jump and catch the bar, and three bars in a row, and they'd flip from one to the other. More people got hurt doing that than any other thing on the show. Because it was considered the most dangerous.
How about the clowns? Where do they fit in the whole pecking order there?
Well, clowns to me are... there's clowns and there's clowns. Some clowns think when they dress up like a clown, they're a clown. And then there's other clowns they wouldn't have to dress up like a clown to be a clown. Now, those are the real clowns, like Emmett Kelly, Arthur Griblin, Lou Jacobs. Those guys were artists. They could make you laugh just walking over looking at you. And clowns are a hard lot to separate. You know, say it was out of 10 clowns, I'd say you'd have 2 in there that were real clowns. And it's not that I don't like clowns particularly. I never did. It wasn't one of my favorite parts of the program, but an awful necessary part of the circus. Because when your act's over and you got to get ready for another one, the clowns come in and fill in till you get ready. And I've seen some awful good clown acts, and I've laughed at a lot of them, and I've frowned at a lot of them. But as long as the kids are laughing, you got a good clown act. If you can please the kids, you got everybody else happy. It's hard to please some of these youngsters these days. You got to just about bend over backwards and break your necks to make some of them laugh. Because they've seen so much. Television's made it awfully hard to entertain our young people. You've got to really do something spectacular.
It's really changed your attention span. They need something quick and fast. And
quick and fast and different. Something they haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And it used to be a circus wasn't a circus unless it had some elephants on it. And now there's so many elephants. They use them for elephant rides, and all the zoos have elephants in them, and they have elephant rides, and most zoos now have little elephant acts. And which is nice. I think it should be that way. Animals are happier when they're working. If you want animals that give you trouble, you have idle animals on the show. And they're the ones that are always giving you trouble. The ones that are working and doing acts and whatnot. That goes for monkeys and horses and everything else. If you want a bad horse on a show, you just pick up one and you carry him because you want to keep him till you get to 1 1/4 and train him. He'll give you more trouble on his show than half a dozen of them that'll work him because he don't do anything. A happy animal's one that's got something to do. That's why it's I guess the elephants now are not as important on a circus as they used to be because they're so common. And you can go to a lot of shopping centers now and there's a guy got an elephant ride. So the kids are used to looking at the elephants. But some of these elephant acts now on some of these shows are pretty spectacular elephant acts. They build pyramids out of them. And they do some fine acts. I've got a friend, and I've got a tape of his elephant that he plays a mouth organ, and he plays a tambourine, and he throws and kicks a football. He does all kind of stuff that is different from this running around and walking on your hind feet and walking on your front feet.
What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in the circus over time?
Well, it hasn't been too terribly much, other than the fact I think circus acts now have perfected their acts a little more. Take jugglers, they're doing more difficult feats now than they used to do. Flying acts are doing triples and quadruples now that a triple used to be considered an extraordinary feat. And now they doing quadruples, and they doing things that all that were, it looks like it's impossible to do. And jugglers are doing things now that, and you got well, there's horse acts now that are outstanding horse acts that they're just not running around in a circle and changing places and whatnot. They're doing intelligent looking things like counting and picking out colors and picking out people and answering questions and doing mathematical problems. Of course, they've done, it's a tricky business, but you think the horse is doing it, and it looks good, and the horse sometimes, I believe, thinks he's doing it too. But I think the acts have improved. Mm-hmm.
But the basic kind of format for the whole thing stayed pretty much the same over
time? It's about the same. In other words, you go to a circus, and you know you're going to see wire walks, and you know you're going to see a trapeze act, and you know you're going to see a horse act, and you know you're going to see a wild animal act as a rule, and you know just about what they're going to do. They're going to be sitting on a pedestal or standing on one. They're going to be walking on their hind feet. They're going to be jumping over something. If a lot of those people knew how much time and effort went into training some of these animals sometimes, and how much patience. And I've seen trainers lay down on the ground and kick and scream like a kid having a tantrum. He just about go out of his mind trying to get just a little bit more edge on the act. And finally it would come through, but it takes patience and hard work.
And almost all that training is done during the winter time?
Most of it. Yeah. Of course, there's a lot of acts that go on the road and they're not quite polished off to what they ought to be. And they keep working on them. They come in between shows and work. Even aerial acts will come in sometime and run practice sessions between shows working on another act. And as soon as they get it to where they're doing it at least 60 or 70% of the time, they'll put it in the show. And pretty soon they're doing it 80%. Pretty soon they're up to 100%. They're doing it at least 100 or 99% of the time. Some of these trapeze acts are doing triple somersaults every show. And they're doing it pretty close to 99% of the time. And 20 years ago, a triple was practically unheard of.
Yeah.
They do it once in a while, you know. And now they've learned to set the rigging a little bit different and use a little different size person, and that makes a big difference. And they've learned a lot of little tricks have helped them.
Have you ever been helping out with any of the performances or anything like that as a performer?
No, I've helped performers work by helping hold some of the equipment for them, something like that. Help with cat acts and whatnot like that, but I've never actually performed myself.
Yeah. I was wondering if maybe you would fill in like as a clown or something if someone was sick.
Never had any desire to. Oh.
So you're interested?
I like the logistics part, making the thing work.
Oh, I see.
And putting it together and watching it go. That's always been the peak of my satisfaction. And the first job I ever had on the circus was superintendent of props. At the time, I didn't exactly know what my duties would be. It didn't take me long to learn. If I hadn't, I wouldn't have been that long. Mm-hmm. And that means keeping the show together, making, changing all the equipment, everything for the next acts. And you have a pretty good-sized crew of men. Each one of them has to know what's coming, and you work for the music. As the music changes, you know what to do. Pretty soon, you can go take a short nap, and the music will wake you up, and you'll know right when what's coming next. And the animals get so. They know when their music starts playing, they come alive. Yeah, the show started off with music in the backyard when 15 minutes before showtime, the man that plays the trumpet in the band comes out into the backyard where the performers live and blows call. That means it's 15 minutes to showtime. And then he comes back and blows it again in 10 minutes. And he doesn't blow it anymore, you better be there. If you miss performance, you miss getting paid for that day.
Yeah.
Huh. If it's your fault, other than sickness. So.
What do you think the future's like for the circus?
I think we're going to see bigger and better circuses. And I think we're going to see tighter performances in circuses. In other words, they're going to be faster. They're going to have to get faster. And no lapse time. There's nothing worse than having a show bogged down on you to where you got nothing going on. You lose your audience attention, and it's hard to get it back. I've stood and watched it, and I like to watch the audience, their reaction to different acts and different things. And you can learn a lot from watching your audience to the improving your show. And I've watched acts and it'd be a little bit too long and they'd chop it off and tighten it up. And it makes a big difference. You notice it in your audience. And there's only one thing I don't like about circuses now. Is intermissions. You lose the attention of your audience. And years ago, we never had any intermission.